Kennard Swanson. Swanson, the number two rated fullback in the United States, and it's a big pickup for USF, and it's a big pickup for Coach Willie Taggart as it raises the Bulls class 2013 signings to 24. There are three early enrolls, counting the two JUCO transfers and the one early enrollee in Emilio Nadelman, and 21 incoming seniors that will move towards the moving up to the USF opportunities come this summer. A lot of news going on, of course, tonight. The Bulls in New York to take on St. John's in basketball. USF is struggling, folks. They've lost their last eight. They are 1-12 in the conference, not looking like a strong run for USF in basketball this year, unlike last year. 888-429-5471, the number to call, 888-429-5471. Get your questions in, and we'd love to have you. We're going to try to get in touch with a couple of guests and get some things rocking and rolling. 888-429-5471 is the number. I'm Steve Berry. Hopefully I'll be joined here in a few minutes by Nick Grinowich, our managing editor, and all that wonderful good stuff. 888-429-5471. Couple of news and notes. Let's go with Nick real quick. Let's get him on with us. And managing editor Nick Grinowich will be joining us. Nick, welcome aboard the bullpen.
Good to be here, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good, Nick. It is another Wednesday edition of the bullpen. We do this every other week, and quite frankly, if you're kind of shocked by this, I am too. I completely forgot about it. I was just kind of chilling for a little bit and realized I had a radio show that started at 5 o'clock. But that's my bad, and thanks to Don, the guys back at BBS Radio, for reminding me that we did have a show. And we will not do that again. From now on, it's every other Wednesday. We'll have the show for you right here on the bullpen. So, Nick, first of all, the big news is the signing class is in. We added one today with Kennard Swanson, USF finishing third in the Big East, 49th overall in the nation. Some great opportunities for the Bulls as they pick up a late signee with Kennard Swanson.
Yeah, what a big pickup from Lake Gibson High School in Lakeland. And number two ranked fullback in the country, first ranked fullback in the state of Florida, was flirting with UCF and a couple of other schools, but came to USF, really liked the school here in Tampa, and decided to sign. And you know, you and I talked before Swanson visited, and we knew that if he came to Tampa, USF was going to have a really good opportunity to sign him. And Willie Taggart and company, they were able to lock him up. And it's a big, big pickup for USF because Willie Taggart likes to run that pro-style, run-heavy offense. And what do you need more than a good running back in a pro-style offense? It's a really good fullback to fill up the holes and run block for you.
Well, Swanson is just that. He's a two-way player, rated the number two overall fullback in the country, the number one fullback signed with the University of Miami. Swanson was a verbal commitment to LSU during the summer and decommitted. Then Florida expressed a lot of interest in him but backed off due to academics. And honestly, Nick, this is a kid that has really worked hard to get to where he's at. He's had to improve his SAT scores, his ACT scores, as well as his GPA, and he's done all three. So kudos to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what you've seen him do in the classroom really speaks a lot to what he could do, not only at the collegiate level academically, but on the field. This is a guy that knows how to work hard. And I mean, as someone who struggled at times with the SAT in high school myself, you know, it's not the easiest test to go in and hit it out of the ballpark. And, you know, it's not an easy test to study for. But he dedicated himself in the classroom to getting there and getting the scores up. And because of that, he's now coming to USF. And I think it just shows a lot about his work ethic and his character. And those are the kind of guys that Willie Taggart and staff are trying to bring in, hard workers that that want to improve the team.
Well, you know, when you talk about Bulls athletics, let's not be remissful when it comes to the women's basketball team, 17-7, 6-5 in the Big East. They take on a big game tonight with Louisville. That is a huge opportunity for USF to make a statement.
Oh, absolutely. 12th-ranked Louisville. And you know, the Bulls are going in after a tough loss last week to St. John's at home. I think that was on Saturday. And So this team is still looking for one of those signature wins. They played Notre Dame very close, lost that game. They've played some other schools very close and fallen, but they take on a 12th-ranked Louisville team tonight where if they can win that game, they can kind of start to solidify themselves to be one of the last teams in to the NCAA tournament. Right now, RPI shows them 77th. That would be just on the outside looking in, but a couple of wins down the line here, and this is one of the nice things about playing in the Big East tournament. Game after game, you're playing against a nationally ranked or a quality opponent. So USF has an opportunity to move up that RPI, and a win tonight could definitely do it.
Well, and of course, the men tonight just trying to get off the schneid. They take on St. John's up in New York City. This Bulls basketball team for the men, I just don't know how to describe this season. It's been an enigma. You know, they started the season out really well at 9-3, and it's like, as soon as the Big East tournament started, that was it.
Yeah, the word enigma is a good one. Painful is another one. Excruciating from time to time is another. They're 10-15, 1-12 in the Big East. They've lost 8 straight games. The only win in conference play they have is against Georgetown. That was back on January 19th, 61-58. And with the way Georgetown is playing right now, that looks like a real quality win. They're in a three-way tie at the top of the Big East calendar, the Big East standings correction. But, you know, they don't seem to be able to do much well in games against opponents that are speedier and quicker than they are. You know, the Bulls aren't a big team. They don't have a lot of depth down low in terms of the post player. But even after that, they're not a quick run-and-gun offense. When you think about the guys that do score for the Bulls, Victor Rudd and Anthony Collins are really the only two guys that can get up and down the floor quickly. And the problem is that the guys that they have that play in the post aren't quick guys. And that's really where they've struggled. They've started to rebound better after the last couple of weeks, but they aren't shooting the ball well, especially from three-point range, which is something they need to do in order to win. The defense is great. They held Louisville that had been averaging 74 points a game to just 59, but they only scored 41 points in that game. And week after week, you know, the all-time lowest scoring record for USF is 36, and they're giving that mark a run every time that they go out and they play. The three out of the last four games, they scored 47 against Marquette, 40 against Villanova, they needed to finish strong to do that, and 41 against Louisville with Providence, 66 points just in there. This team is deficient offensively, and it's painful to watch at times, especially when you have a quality point guard in Anthony Collins somehow creating 6 to 8 assists a game off of 41 points. That's actually impressive.
Well, when you look at the leaderboard for the Bulls, Victor Rudd averaging 10.7 points a game, Torian Fitzpatrick at 10.3, Juwanza Poland at 9.7. That says it all. I mean, normally in college basketball, you're going to have a guy that's averaging 18, 20 points a game, a Michael Snare, if you will, or a the kid from Miami whose name escapes me right now, the point guard. But you usually have a scorer who's going to be in the 15 to 20 point range. And yes, USF is very balanced, but that's what I look at is the fact that they really, ever since that triple overtime game back in December, they haven't crossed the 70 point mark but one time.
Yeah, the style of offense that they play doesn't lend them to really score over 65 points a game. The Bulls really like to play a slow, methodical, developing offense. They like to give the ball to Anthony Collins, let him move the ball across the top and set a lot of back screens and off-ball screens for players to try to free Collins up or someone else up. And then once the clock hits 10, they start to put everything in motion. But you mentioned those top three guys, you know, Victor Rudd, Portland Fitzpatrick, and Anthony Collins. Collins isn't scoring a lot because he's distributing, but Portland Fitzpatrick and Victor Rudd are really two guys that need to step up and score more. And you look against that game against Louisville, I mean, the Bulls had one player in double figures. It was Juwanza Poland, who has appeared and disappeared throughout the year, but Rudd had 7, Fitzpatrick had 9. They need more out of those guys. And when you look at some of the teams they've been playing, you know, they've got guys, and the other team, Russ Smith for Louisville, is averaging 19 points a game. You mentioned kind of the discrepancy in a big-time scorer, a go-to guy for the Bulls. You know, in the last two games, USF has played the top two guys in points per game. Bryce Cotton, who was just over 20 a game in to lead the Big East, and then Russ Smith, who's second at just about 18 a game. So the Bulls don't have a go-to scorer, and that couldn't have been even more obvious against Louisville when, frankly, the Cardinals took Anthony Collins out of the game, and USF struggled to get the ball across half court, and from there struggled to get the ball in the hands of the guy who could score. And they even had Dominique Jones sitting on the floor, who was on the All-Star break, you know, the go-to scorer for the Bulls back in those 08-09 teams. And I'll tell you what, I bet you Stan Heath wished that he could suit up for that game, but unfortunately he couldn't. So USF needs to find a guy that's going to free himself up and put the basketball on the hoop. And I think in years to come, it could be a guy like Javonte Hawkins. I really like the way he's played the last couple of weeks. But for now, they don't have someone who can take the ball, you know, in the three-quarter court and go all the way down and create something himself and create a lane. They just don't have that.
Well, one thing is for sure, in the wings for the Bulls is one of their big commits, four-star forward John Ebugnu. And Ebugnu brings a big game to the Bulls. And when he gets on campus next year, I think you'll see a lot of good things coming from the young freshman who was very highly recruited, is all ready to go for USF, 6'9", 230 pounds, plays at Fort Walton Beach. He's in the Rivals 150 at number 78, and he is the number 8 center in the country. That will be a welcome respite because USF, before the season, lost two of their big guns when it comes to down low.
They did. I mean, they lost Augustus Gilchrist and they lost Ron Anderson Jr. that graduated. Then they lost Waverly Austin, who went to Oregon because of academic issues. And when you look at that, you lost three big guys, really, and it's really hard to make up for that. You look at Ebunu coming in. I mean, he's going to be a sight for sore eyes. I'm sure that Stan Heath is going to be happy to see him. I'm sure Stan's disappointed they can't suit him up right now because he could make a difference at this moment in the Bulls lineup, and I'm sure he'll be playing some good minutes. And, you know, one of the most disappointing things about the season for the Bulls is the fact that Jordan Amogbane hasn't necessarily been healthy or been ready to play major minutes, and when he's out there, has struggled really just fundamentally. If he starts to settle himself into playing basketball, which is the game he hasn't played his entire life, he's just a big body. And it's just what the Bulls have really been missing. It's a real kind of shake-your-head season because there's some serious talent on this team, Anthony Collins, and even Victor Rugg goes through some hot spells. He scored 30 points 2 games ago against Providence. But there are times also where this team is just deficient almost across the board.
Well, you know, Nick, if you talk about a couple of the next year's players, and we mentioned Ebugnu, whose season is over. They lost in the playoffs and are eliminated. Mm-hmm. So he's got USF on his mind from this point forward. And also Chris Perry, another center that is signed with the Bulls from Bartow, Florida. Chris Perry, a great pickup for the USF Bulls at Bartow. And if you get a chance to watch him play, he's over there in Bartow, over in Polk County, 6'8", 247 pounds. Has a very good rebounding skills. His ball handling skills are improving, and his shooting is improving. He was rated number 147 in the Rivals class of 150 and the 17th rated center. He is committed to the Bulls, so he's ready to go. Both of those are sorely needed for USF, for the Bulls moving forward for next year. And I know we're talking about next year. Forgive us for that, but it's only because of the fact that at 10-15, this basketball team pretty much it's going to be an opportunity to see if they can actually, you know, take the next step.
I think that one good thing about this year is that Stan Heath has had the opportunity to play some of the younger guys more minutes. You know, I think in a winning situation, you don't see Javonte Hawkins or the other freshman who I'm playing on right now for US, Zach Ledee from Texas. You don't see him as much. Yep. I mean, Ledee's played 24 games. He's averaging 15 minutes a game as well. Hawkins, 19 games, he's averaging 15 and a half minutes. You don't see those guys as much. It's some real good educational time for the Bulls, and I think that going into next year, you're going to have some more experienced post players that are younger but that have some upside, especially Zach Ledee. I like the way he plays defense down low. And going into next year, Sean Noriega is going to seek a medical redshirt. I don't expect to see him the rest of this year. I think he's done for the season. And that'll give USF a dangerous outside shooter. I mean, for those that remember the heyday of Sean Noriega, and it may have been a short time, but last year Noriega was a big part in getting the Bulls a crucial basket when they needed it. And also looking into next year, let's not forget that Demetrius Henry is still mulling over his decision. The four-star center from Brandon, He's narrowed it down to three schools. It's Miami, South Carolina, or USF at this point in time. And you know, the only problem for USF is Miami is just having a heck of a season right now. With the win over Duke and working their way not only into a ranked situation, but in a position where they could potentially really contend for a national title. The Bulls had Henry on campus when USF played Marquette. The only problem is they got blown out by 28 points. So that doesn't look too good to a Rivals 150 player that comes in. But at the same time, Stan Heath can turn him and say, see how much we need you?
Well, if you want to get a chance to watch Chris Henry, by the way, he's in action Saturday night at Bartow as the Yellow Jackets, who, oddly enough, wear orange and blue, take on the Oak Ridge Pioneers in the state region finals for Class 7A. And that will be a good ball game played over at Bartow as the Yellow Jackets host the Oak Ridge Pioneers. And you'll get a chance to see Chris Perry and some of the others. And you mentioned Henry, and that's an important fact. You mentioned University of Miami, and yes, Miami's having a phenomenal season, but there's still this little matter of the NCAA investigation hanging over their heads.
Yeah, there is. That's a mess, that investigation. It's something I haven't followed that closely, but I mean, Miami definitely has to get all that sorted out, and I'll tell you what, I think it will affect some of their recruiting going forward as to whether or not there's going to be sanctions coming. The NCAA has kind of admitted that they botched it, but it could be something that, especially in the Henry situation, might help USF out. But I really think that in this kind of, for instance, a player like Henry makes his decision based upon where he wants to play, because I wouldn't expect for you to be out of the commitment in terms of contending in the postseason for very long, especially since the NCAA has some kind of fault in the investigation.
Well, again, you know, the situation just gets more interesting and more interesting. But let's keep talking about USF sports. The baseball team and the softball team up to a good start. We'll catch on that, talk a little bit more with Nick Grinowitz, managing editor of runningthebulls.com. Plus, take your phone calls at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Phone lines are open. Nick and I are standing by. Give us a call. Back in 60 seconds with more talk from the bullpen. Steve Berry along with Nick Grinowitz. We're back in 60 seconds. Hey, welcome back to In the Bullpen. Steve Berry along with Nick Grinowitz, managing editor of runningthebulls.com. Glad to have you along wherever you may be, as this is show number two of Running the Bulls, exclusive production of In the Bullpen. And Nick, as we mentioned, the softball and baseball teams have gotten off to a pretty good start. Baseball traveling up to Tallahassee this weekend to take on Florida State. And you watched baseball over the weekend. You're a former baseball player. 1-2 start, but not bad competition they opened up with.
Yeah, 1-2 over the weekend, but not bad competition. All three teams they played, if I'm remembering Indiana correctly, went to a regional last year. At least two out of the three did. Purdue, a surprise win in the regular season last year in the Big Ten. Louisville ranked 19th in the country, as high as fourth in the Baseball America poll. Both started off really rough. Gave up four runs in the top half of the first inning against Louisville. Ended up losing that game 10-1, but then the back woke up in game two. They won that one 20-2, but then Sunday couldn't quite finish off the weekend on a positive note. They fell 12-2 to the Hoosiers. It's really early in the year. One thing you'll hear a lot of baseball guys say is the phrase sample size. We don't have much of a sample size for this team quite yet, but one thing I can tell you after speaking with head coach Lalo Prado today is they're nervous about the pitching. Nick Gonzalez got roughed up in his first start, and Lalo said Nick had not started in a game in a long time, and he was right about that. Gonzalez made 22 appearances, but just two starts last season, and he got roughed up. Now, Joey Lovechio on day two, five innings, struck out four or five guys as well in that game. And Joey looked good, too, but you know, Lovechio started out really strong last year, started 7-1, ended up 8-4, 9-4 last season as well. So it's all about getting into conference play for him. And there's still an open competition for that Sunday slot. Now, we did see some freshmen make some very good first appearances on the mound. Justin Patrick, Justin Patrick, Lawrence Pardo, those kind of guys made some very good solid appearances. And some guys as well at the plate. And Nicholas Alfonso made a great first impression as a redshirt freshman onto the scene. Ended up going 5-for-8 over the weekend, five runs scored and three RBIs. Pinch hit against Louisville, started the game against Purdue, and then pinch hit again against Indiana. You know, he had a very good weekend. It's whether or not the Bulls continue to do that. And Chris Norton made the Big East Weekly Honor Roll as well with a very big weekend at the plate. So, you know, it's really early for this team, but I think that if they can pitch, they're going to have an opportunity to win some games. But as usual, I think this team is going to struggle to score runs because they don't have any guys in the middle of the lineup that are going to consistently hit the ball over the fence. You're going to see someone with six or seven home runs lead the team in long balls for another year, and it's whether or not maybe this team can do enough on the base paths. You have James Ramsey and Alex Mendez who can steal bases. Are there any other guys that can do that? They need to find a way to get someone in a scoring position without bunting and giving out. And I think that that's a real question going forward against Florida State and going forward throughout the season.
All right, let's talk about women's softball as the Bulls got off to a pretty quick start in women's softball as well.
Yeah, had a good first weekend, but last weekend didn't quite go USF's way. And our senior writer, Josh Appel, did a lot of the work for softball this weekend. But, you know, they ended up going 1-3 on the weekend, beating Coastal Carolina one of the two times they faced them, losing to Tennessee and NC State. And that Tennessee game was close. It was a no-hitter for Sarah Nevins when the floodgates opened up. And you know, I talked with Ken Erickson today, and he just talked about the fact that they're going to lose some games this year, and that's because they put together a really, really difficult schedule. There's a lot of top 20 teams, you know, on the calendar for them, but that's how you get into postseason play, and it's going to train them and get them ready for the, you know, the College World Series again. That's where they plan to be. So, you know, this team may struggle a bit at times throughout the year, but that's because that's the nature of the schedule they're going to play. I mean, they've already faced two top 15 teams in Michigan and Tennessee. They've beaten one of them. And going forward, they're going to have a big, big order to try to fill because they have a lot of really tough teams on the schedule. But offensively, they've had to change quite a few things. And Erickson talked about it. You know, Jaden Fallis is gone. And, you know, anytime you lose a player that's reaching base at, you know, a 500 clip, you're going to feel it offensively the next year, but Leanne Spivey has been a really nice revelation for the Bulls in the middle of the order, and same thing with Deanna Devine. She had a very good weekend for USF, but what they're going to have to do is maybe try to rely on their power. They have some players in the middle of the lineup. Spivey's one of them, and Stephanie Medina as well. They moved Courtney Stavarola from the leadoff spot to the three spot in the order to try to bring a little more run-scoring opportunity for the Bulls. It's going to be about mixing and matching in that lineup and trying to find the right combination for Ken Erickson early in the year. But at the end of the season, I expect them to be there once again. I only expect them to win the Big East, but to once again go deep into the playoffs because they have the pitching. Lindsey Richmond has been lights out and one of the best pitchers, I think, in the nation through the first two weekends. But as I said with the baseball team in terms of sample size, we haven't seen quite enough yet, I think, to be able to make a full decision on how exactly this team's going to do, but they look strong early.
All right, Nick, your thoughts on the final, give me some final thoughts on the signing class. I know we talked a little bit about it 2 weeks ago, but give me some final thoughts towards this class brought on by Willie Taggart. Just the effort, the surprises, the biggest sleeper.
The biggest sleeper was Tanner Swanson. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting him to go to USF until about a week and a half ago when you broke the story, Steve, that he was going to visit USF, and we got a chance to talk about the opportunity. Final thoughts, I mean, I talked about it on National Signing Day. It was a big day for the Bulls. Not only did they go 20 for 20 and now 21 for 21, they brought in some quality talent and with only a month to do it. And I think they caught a lot of attention of some of the high school players in the area, that they're bringing in strong guys, and it's going to be a place that's building but is going to win quickly. And, you know, in talking to some of the local talent, I talked to Rollerson from Plant High School. You know, they all love Coach Taggart. They really do. They love his energy. They love the way that he displays kind of his love for the university, but just the way that his plans are put together. You know, and one thing Taggart has done to every recruit is he said to him, I want to win a national title right here at USF. And no, it may not be something that is within reach next year. You know, it might be something that's within reach the next 3 or 4, 5 or 6 years. And some of these kids coming in, you know, you think about a redshirt season, maybe have an opportunity to be there for that and building this program to national prominence. Now, I'm not saying necessarily it's going to happen in the next 5 or 6 years, but Taggart's definitely trying to put the Bulls in a situation to be able to do that. And his first signing class, you think it will only get better, will give them an opportunity to be able to do that.
All right, so coming up this week, the rest of the week on runningthebulls.com, if you're a reader for Running the Bulls, Nick's going to tell you what to expect. Of course, we're breaking down the two basketball games tonight as the women take on Louisville, the men take on St. John's. We'll have coverage for both of those games. And, Nick, what else have we got coming down the pike?
Well, from a baseball side, because I cover that team, you can expect two articles to go up in the next day or so about Nick Alfonso and Levi Borders. Borders is a great story. Passed on the MLB draft, come here to USF. He's from up in the Orlando area. And Nick Alfonso redshirted last year. And I talked to him today, and he just talked about how much he learned in that first year of being able to redshirt and how he's been in the weight room and really hungry. So those are going to be two really good articles. Not sure if they're going to be two separate or if they're going to be one article. I think it kind of depends on whether or not I can get enough from Border of the situation. But on the other side, for softball, expect a preview coming up for the weekend. We're going to do a lot of coverage for USF at Florida State. I'm going to be writing a lot of previews for that as well. And then, you know, we're hunting down guys that went to junior day for the Bulls last week. A couple of the profiles have gone up, and then a couple of what could happen in each position going forward as well. I know our senior writer, Josh Appel, is working on that. So there's a lot going up for multiple sports, but you know, this is the only place right here at Running the Bulls where you can get that. It's not just football recruiting. It's basketball, it's baseball, it's softball, and you know, I'm even making some calls to cover this cross-country or track and field team that did so well in the Big East tournament as well. So, you know, they should keep it locked right on runningthebulls.com because everything's going to be right there coming this weekend for what's going forward.
All right, well, when we come back, we'll talk about the next step for a few Bulls players who are heading up to Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. We'll talk about that, plus take your phone calls and give you our final thoughts on the two basketball games and the baseball and softball series coming up. After this, we'll take a one-minute timeout. This is In the Bullpen with Nick Grinowitz and Steve Berry back after this one-minute timeout. Welcome back to In the Bullpen. I'm Steve Berry, along with Nick Grinowitz, the managing editor of runningthebulls.com. And in case you missed it, we have everything up on the website, so you can always go back and review again and again. Of course, one of the bigger stories is the picking up of the number 2 fullback in the country, as Kennard Swanson officially became a USF Bull. with his return of the national letter of intent this today. So that's a big pickup for the Bulls as they pick up the number three player or number two fullback in the country. And that's a huge pickup. He is a three-star. I did check with Rivals. It does not increase our rating in the standings of the Big East because they only go with the top 20 players, and he fell right into that top 20 at the same place that someone else did. But, you know, when you look at the next step for these players, what every player is aspiring to be, what every player is aspiring to do, where they want to go, they want to be in Indianapolis, Nick, and they want to be in Indianapolis in particular for South Florida for two particular players on Monday, February 25th for the defensive linemen and the linebackers and Tuesday, February 26th for the defensive backs. Let's talk a little bit about the Bulls and where their next steps are for the senior players who are going to the NFL Combine.
Well, three guys are going for USF, Sam Barrington, Corey Grissom, and Kayvon Webster. And those three guys all have an opportunity to really have, you know, breakout performances there. And I think Webster, especially, a guy, he's down in Miami right now, getting his, you know, getting himself ready to go for, you know, for the 40-yard dash and for some of the drills. And, you know, he has an opportunity, I think, to show that he's a solid cover guy. I heard he's working in the weight room. He's gotten bigger since the end of the year and has an opportunity to have a real breakout performance.
Well, Sam Barrington, obviously from Jacksonville, Terry Parker High School, also one of the players that I'm more familiar with, you know, having watched him play high school football. He's kind of an under-the-radar guy, flying below the radar and could come up and surprise some people.
Yeah, Sam definitely has. I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and, I mean, he's kind of the same story. I mean, he's working right now at trying to overcome, some off-field kind of assumptions about him, whether or not, he's responsible enough, I think, for a team to take him in the draft. There were a couple of times where he missed some games due to some off-field stuff. But, you know, you look at him, 6 foot, 244 pounds, nice measurement instrument, ran a 4.740 earlier this year. You know, I think Sam's another guy that maybe can increase his status by going to the combine and having a good showing. But, I mean, I think for all three of these guys, I think Grissom is the guy that has the best potential to be taken the highest. But Barrington and Webster, I wouldn't be surprised to see them taken in the late round.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the third player that's going to be in the NFL Combines. Or did I just miss that? Sorry, I was multitasking.
No, Corey Grissom was the third guy that we were talking about. He played on the defensive line for USF this last year, 6'1", 313 pounds, the defensive tackle. He was a redshirt senior, so 5 years in college gave him an opportunity to really get himself in good playing condition. Ran a 5.140, but then again, for a guy his size, you're really worrying about his potential in terms of how good are his hands, his footwork. Some of the scouting services that I've seen have him ranked, as the number 16 defensive tackle, 182nd ranked player that's headed to the combine. When we saw that Grissom was invited to the Senior Bowl, I mean, I took a look at some of his numbers and some of his tape, and I really felt like Grissom had an opportunity to go play at the next level and be a difference maker, and maybe not quite like Jason Pierre-Paul did coming out of USF and going to the Giants, but I think that Grissom could be a guy on the interior defensive line that can really wreak some havoc. He's got good hands, and he has some good speed and ability to push opponents back towards the quarterback. And it's not all about getting to the quarterback. It's about creating holes for the linebackers to get in, and that's something that Corey did very well in his tenure at USF.
All right. Well, let's also take a look at, as we mentioned, the baseball and softball series this weekend, but one final look at basketball. Josh Appel will be joining us here in a moment. One final look at basketball for the men. They take on St. John's. Honestly, Nick, right now USF can play the spoiler. I really don't think they have a shot at the postseason, not at 10-15, not at 1-12 in Big East play, but by gosh, they can determine who gets there.
This season's over. And usually I'm not the one that has that bleak of an outlook, but you know, the season's not going to go USF's way. I mean, at 1-12 in Big East play, losing 8 straight, they have some huge deficiencies. But, you know, this late in the year, a Stan Heath coach basketball team, you know, at least Stan Heath would hope, could fare down and try to create that spoiler role. You have some games ahead against some of the top teams or against some of the better teams in the conference. They have an opportunity to upset that. I mean, they beat Georgetown. I mean, that's hurting the Hoyas right now, and they had an opportunity to upset Marquette as well, but couldn't do that. But, you know, they have an opportunity to just kind of bear down. And it's all about experience now, I think, for some of these guys. I mean, when you look at Anthony Collins, still a sophomore, you know, Victor Rudd has another year left, the two freshmen, Zach Ledet and Javonte Hawkins as well. I mean, they're going to return a nice core next year and then add on some very, very good young talent. And I would really like to see, you know, Jordan Amogbain play some more minutes down the line, especially as the season becomes apparent that that they're not going anywhere, because I want to see Amogbain play as many minutes as possible to try to get as much experience. But, you know, they have an opportunity to upset some teams going down the line here and maybe throw a wrench into their plans.
Well, now, you talk about this Bulls basketball team that has struggled throughout the season, but we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, you already mentioned Sean Noriega, but also there are a couple of other players that are out with injuries that has really contributed to the struggles inside.
Yeah, I think that not having Corey White for as long as the Bulls did, I mean, Corey's missed, was it 5 or 6 games this year, and he's been kind of ineffective due to a foot injury. Now, I don't think Corey White has the tools to be a complete difference maker, you know, graduate student that came from FAU. But you've seen defensively the last 2 games against Providence and Louisville, he's played some very solid minutes. I mean, that Louisville game got out of hand because Corey White came out of the game. And the same thing with Providence. Corey had 9 rebounds against Louisville, against Providence down low. He was really causing the Friars some fits in terms of rebounding and just disrupting and picking up some offensive rebounds. So he's played some minutes, and that injury has really hurt them. Torlan Fitzpatrick has been banged up through the year, but it's still the only player that's played all 24 games for USF. The Bulls are missing Sean Noriega. And you look down the line, they missed Victor Rudd for that game against Villanova. The Bulls got blown out. Anthony Collins missed the game against Stetson this year. The game USF won, but they missed him for that game. You know, one guy I think that USF has really kind of missed this year is Juwan Topolin. He hasn't been as effective, I think, as they would have hoped, so averaging 9 points and 4.5 rebounds.
Well, and then also don't forget the injury to Abdul Aleem.
Yes, and Musa was the guy that I missed there. Has played in only 9 games this year, had a foot injury going into the season, so he missed all of those games, and recently it's been a lower back injury that he hurt playing against Louisville the first time. Didn't play against Rutgers. Re-aggravated, I think, against Notre Dame, and yeah, he hasn't really played since. And you know, Musa, a transfer from Hofstra, is averaging 3 points and a little over 1 rebound a game. He was a guy that I think could have really made a difference, because he's a slasher that likes to get to the rim and get to the free throw line. And you know, even when he got to the free throw line this year, you know, he only attempted 7 free throws this season. It's been kind of a missed year for Musa Abdul-Aleem because of all the injuries.
All righty. Well, your final thoughts on what it's going to take for the baseball team to go up there and take 2 out of 3 from Florida State?
Offense. It's going to take a lot of offense. Florida State's 3-0. They swept Rhode Island over the weekend, but it took them 10 innings to beat Rhode Island on Sunday. They have Jacksonville tonight. They were supposed to play them yesterday, but due to impending weather, decided to play tonight. The Bulls may get the Seminoles only with 2 days rest, which I think will make little difference. But they're going to need to score some runs. It's going to be about James Ramsey. It's going to be about Jimmy Fowler in that order, and whether or not they can score some runs. I think if Chris Norton has another big weekend, the Bulls might be able to come away. But it's going to be about scoring runs, and once again, can the pitching staff just give them an opportunity to win? You know, I talked to Lalo Prado today, and I tried to step aside and talk to him personally for a moment, but he had to get to practice. I wanted to ask him, you know, how is it different this year on Friday as opposed to the last couple of years? I mean, when you think about it, the last 2 years for the Bulls, they've had Randy Fontenot and Andrew Barbosa pitching on Friday night. let your guys at any point in time control a no-hitter for you. Randy did it once against Notre Dame. Barbosa, 16 strikeout game last year against Cincinnati. You know, that guy's not on the pitching staff this year for USF. They have a lot of contact guys. The lefty, Nick Gonzalez, who pitches a lot to contact. Hitters batted 295 against Joey Lovechio last year. The rest of the guys, there's no one really lighting up the radar gun, but we're still early in the season. They're going to need to give the Bulls an opportunity to score or to stay in ball games, and that's quality start. Six innings, three runs or less should really be, I'm sure, appreciated from Lalo Prado in first-year pitching coach Lance Carter. It's going to be about whether or not the pitching can keep them in the game.
Okay, off Bulls topics, let's talk a little bit about one of the developments that happened with our good friends down at Miami. Mario Cristobal leaves the University of Miami to go to Alabama. Cristobal just joined the Miami staff. How about that?
You know, that was a surprise. I talked to our senior writer, Josh Chappelle, about that, and I'll tell you what, I think you're going to have him on after me. He's going to have a better opinion about this than I am, because I'm not as plugged into the South Beach culture as Josh is, but a lot of people were surprised. I mean, going up to Alabama for Cristobal, and a lot of fans were upset about it. And once again, I mean, Miami is having questions about loyalty. You have the Denver Kirkland situation. Now you have the Mario Cristobal situation.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining us. I want to thank you for jumping in and kind of filling some time and getting your thoughts on a lot of things that are going on. Nick Krenowitz, the managing editor of RunningTheBulls.com. This is The Bullpen. I'm Steve Berry. We'll take a one-minute timeout. When we come back, we'll hopefully have Josh Chappelle on with us. We'll talk about the class of 2014 and Junior Day right after this. The phone lines are open at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Give us a call. Phone lines are open, and we'll be back after this one-minute timeout. Welcome back to The Bullpen. I'm Steve Berry. Along with joining us now is Josh Appel, the senior writer for RunningTheBulls.com. Josh, I asked Nick this question. I'll pose it to you, not related to South Florida, but sort of, because one of the top recruiters for the University of Miami was Mario Cristobal. Well, today he announced he's leaving and going to Alabama. Shock or no?
I'm in the middle on this. I don't think it's very shocking, because I think that when he took the job with Miami, I think a lot of that staff knew that this was possible. I think I remember reading something like that. I know there was a lot of backlash when this actually happened from UM fans and former players about him leaving so early and so soon to go to Alabama. When you look at the upgrades, I guess, for him going to Alabama, he was getting three times the salary. He's going to be able to coach his old position, the offensive line, and he's going to be the associate head coach of a team that just won the national championship. And last night, Miami was hit with their notice of allegations from the NCAA. Now, regardless of whatever that turns into, there's still some, you know, up in the air things that are happening at Miami as far as sanctions go. He's going somewhere to Alabama, or again, it's an upgrade for him. He's going to a better program at this point in time. It's the top dog in college football, and not only that, but he wants to get back as a head coach. And for his situation, going to Alabama is going to pretty much guarantee him a head coaching opportunity after this season. At least that's how I view it.
All right, let's talk about 2014, Josh, because you and I both have been profiling a lot of these athletes that are getting offers, and two quarterbacks that we profiled on back-to-back were Chase Litton and Sean White. I'll start with Chase Litton. I'll let you jump in with Sean White. What really impressed me about Chase Litton is when I talked to him last night, he was on the team bus on the way back from a semifinal regional victory in basketball, and basically said, "Look, I'm not going to Alabama next weekend. I'm not going this weekend. I'm not going next weekend. I'm going to have to wait because if we win Saturday, we're in a state tournament, and I want to play in the state tournament." I asked him how many points he scored. He said he couldn't remember. Now, most people that I've ever talked to that are quarterbacks, that are stats-driven, they're going to remember how many points they had. They're going to remember how many shots they had. Chase Litton just strikes me as the kind of kid that, you know, he really wants to get things done and doesn't really care about the glory. I also remember watching him at Ignite when he and another quarterback, and I do believe it was the kid from Tampa Catholic, did rock, paper, scissors to see who would throw the final pass of the one-on-one drills. And, of course, Chase lost, but very graciously did the rock, paper, scissors to determine who would throw that final pass. Chase Litton, a local kid from the city of Tampa, a place for Wharton High School, has some ties. Mom cheered at Miami. Dad went to Florida. LSU's been in the mix. Got lots of offers. Where do you think the Bulls stand with Chase Litton?
I think that Chase Litton is an interesting prospect because I think that they have an advantage as far as being in his hometown. I think Willie and his staff are going to try and make a big effort to keep those guys in Tampa. However, I don't know how Willie's going to match up against a school like LSU or a school like Florida. And that's, I think, what it's going to come down to, because I think USF is going to be in the mix. I absolutely do, because of the hometown aspect. But the bigger programs, the better programs like LSU and like Florida, I think those are probably going to be the more attractive factors for him. There are a lot of quarterbacks out there in this class. I know, let's talk about Sean White, one of them. But I think Chase Litton might be a little too high on the quarterback, I guess, rankings in Florida for USF to be able to land him.
Okay, all right. Talk a little bit about Sean White. You got a chance to profile him. He inherits the job from Mike White as he transfers from Chaminade over to University School for his senior season.
Absolutely. Sean White, good size, 6'2", a little smaller than Mike White was. Mike White's 6'5", but Sean White, 6'2", says that his best quality is being able to read defenses. He knows whatever they throw at him, he knows what holes to attack. He also mentioned that he has a strong arm, can extend the play, kind of like Ben Roethlisberger, not necessarily someone who's going to run the ball down the field, but someone who can keep his feet moving and extend the play to get his receivers open downfield. And when he's on the run, he has that strong arm to be able to deliver accurate and strong throws. Sean is a very grounded person, very well-spoken kid. When I spoke to him, he was very grateful for what he for his opportunity at Chaminade. And now he's looking forward to replacing Mike at University School and continuing the tradition that Coach Harriet's built there. Mike White helped continue last year with the state title. Sean's a very good kid, and he's going to get looks from all over the place. Right now, Boston College, Miami of Ohio, USF obviously has been talking to him. Florida State as well has been in contact with Sean. He's going to pick up a lot of offers. It's very early for him in the process. Not as high up on the list for some schools as Chase Litton, but Sean White's a very viable option. Probably going to be on the brink of a 3 or 4-star recruit, high 3, low 4-star recruit, I would say. But Sean's going to get some good looks from around the entire country. And I expect, again, USF to be right up there in the mix with Sean. I even asked Sean if Mike White being at USF would be any determining factor. And he said they've talked about playing together. It's nothing major right now, but obviously it's early in the process. And again, he's probably going to pick up more offers. You'll see a school like USF go in and offer these kids very early to get the school on their radar.
All right, let's also talk about a couple of players that are not quarterbacks. Isaiah Wynn, the offensive lineman from Lakewood High School over in St. Petersburg, has pretty much been a USF offer for a while. He did not attend junior days. He's going to be up at Alabama on March the 23rd, visiting up there. So Isaiah Wynn getting a lot of opportunities. And then there's Ray Rollerson, who got offered at junior days on Sunday. Rollerson from Plant High School, helping to build up that offensive line that Coach Willie Taggart's going to run that offense behind.
Yeah, absolutely. And we mentioned that there, I'm sure you mentioned earlier in the show that Kenard Swanson is now part of the, he's going to be a huge part of the running game. But other than quarterback, I would say that offensive line is the position they need the most depth at. And if you can build some strong depth at the offensive guard, offensive tackle positions, you're going to be in good shape, especially in this offense where it's very much run-oriented. They lost a couple guys on the offensive line this season. They're kind of thin at that that unit coming into this year. So any depth that they can add coming out of this season, going into the next recruiting class in 2015 is going to be an advantage.
All right, well, when you look at Rollerson's numbers, 6'5", 270-pound offensive lineman from Plant High School, you know Plant has always been known as having some big, burly offensive linemen. Of course, Richie Kleppel, a product of the Plant offensive line, who gave up the game because of concussions. And Rollerson, one of those players that stepped right in. He's got offers from Boston College, Rutgers. He's also talking to Tennessee. Right now, USF, one of those top three choices for Rollerson. We'll keep you posted on that. What we're doing right now is we're profiling a lot of the 2014 offers. We have broken down four or five of them, as I mentioned. You know, Rollerson, we talked about Garrett Jones, the wide receiver out of Orlando that received an offer from West Orange High School, who has had his numbers go down a little bit, but he is truly a two-way player that has a lot of speed and can make a lot of things happen. I think Garrett Jones is one of those that we got to keep for Garrett Johnson, my apologies. I got my players mixed up there. Garrett Johnson is one of those players we've got to keep an eye on because he has definitely got some speed. And that noise tells you that we're getting close on time. That's my little warning alarm that goes off when we get close on time. Let's finish up with Garrett Johnson. 5'10", 165 pounds, gained a little bit of weight during the summer, put on some strength. Here's some numbers on him. He has over 2,000 yards of total offense. 1,000 of those came in his sophomore year. His junior year, his receiving yards dropped down to 685, but his rushing yards were 194, and he played defense. Now, he was clocked at 4.7 in the 40 at the Under Armour Underclassmen Combine in St. Petersburg. He will be attending the Rivals Challenge at Lake Gibson on March the 23rd. He's also playing for Team Top Recruits, the defending national champions from the Orlando 7-on-7 competition, and that is a huge, huge opportunity to play with Top Recruits. He played for them last year, and we'll play for him again this year. He was recruited mostly by Walt Wells and David Reeves and was very happy to receive that offer from South Florida at Junior Days. We'll be previewing a few more ball players as we go on through the day. One quick question to let you wrap things up for us, Josh, your final thoughts. I asked Nick, I'll ask you, does USF men's basketball have a chance to determine their own destiny, or is the season over?
I think they obviously have a chance. I mean, they're playing in the Big East tournament. Every team makes it from the Big East. And as you know, in college basketball, anything can happen. They play, see, this team is so sporadic. I mean, they were down by 6 at one point in the second half to Louisville. They held Connecticut 15 points in the first half. They were up against Villanova and just kind of fell apart in the second half. It's those gaps, the 6-7 minute gaps in the second half, it's really killing them. And they're not that bad of a team. They're catching bad breaks, and they're not executing when they need to. The defense is very good, and then it falls apart. And the offense isn't really good enough. They're not a good enough shooting team to stick around with these better teams. But, again, anything can happen on any given day. Again, they were down 6 against Louisville and then kind of fell apart in the middle of the second half there. So I think they can. They absolutely can determine their own destiny. Whether I think it'll happen, that remains to be seen. But they have a big test against on the road tonight against St. John's. Maybe they can pick up a win and improve to 2-12 in the Big East.
Well, you know, and the schedule is not a very forgiving schedule, and you have very little depth on the inside game, and that's where USF has been hurt the most is their inside play. They have not been rebounding well. They have not been getting second-chance points. And they have been shooting numbers that were so far below the Mendoza line, they would have been sent down to AAA if they were playing baseball. They play at St. John's.
Well,
they have a week off before they play at Pittsburgh. And maybe Coach Stan Heath and the guys can take that week to rest and recuperate and get ready for the remainder of the Big East tournament.
Well, you mentioned the down low on the rebounding issues. They've actually improved a bit in that area. They've out-rebounded the teams offensively, for that matter, in the last six games. But in general, they have two top ESPN top 150 and Rivals top 150 recruits, and they're only one of three schools in the entire nation to have two players in the top 150 that are forwards or centers. So they have John Agbunu, and they have one more, both 6'10 and 6'11.
Chris Perry.
For next season.
Yep.
Out in the post. Yep, Chris Perry. And Rick Pitino said, this team is not bad. San Heath is one or two guys in the post away from having a real contender of a team.
All right, well, listen, Josh, thanks for joining us on the Spot Notice. Our thanks to Nick Grinowitz, and our thanks to Don, our producer, back in Studio Central. This is The Bullpen. It comes your way every other Wednesday right here on BBS Radio. And be sure to join us 2 weeks from now as we talk a little more basketball, a little more baseball, a little more softball, and we start talking about spring football. Can you believe it? It's almost here. For Josh Appel, for Nick Grinowitz, this is Steve Berry reminding you prayer changes things, so get on your knees and fight like a man. Good night, everybody, from The Bullpen.